Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Tool! Tool! Hollered 3-year-old Jody as she bounded down the hall, headed for the coat closet. What? Her grandmother looked at Tricia, Jody's mom. What is she talking about? Oh, Tricia met her at the kitchen door. She thinks it's a school day today, and she just loves to go to preschool. I hear that's really popular these days, nodded Jody's grandmother. It's been a godsend, Tricia exclaimed. You can only go to the park so many times. I was losing my mind. Tool time, Jody announced happily, appearing in the hallway with her coat on backwards and her backpack in her hand. What do you like about your school? Her grandmother asked, squatting beside her.
The house, Jody beamed. The house with Tina.
Her grandmother looked quizzically at Jody's mom. Yes, Tricia interpreted. There's a wonderful playhouse, and she and her friend Christina have very complicated scenarios involving imaginary family, pets, and even some pretend gourmet cooking. You know, Jody's grandmother mused, when your mom was little, she just played in the kitchen with some pots and pans. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about pre-kindergarten education? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is an expert in exactly this area. Dr. Libby Doggett is the executive director of Pre-K Now, a public education and advocacy organization that advances high-quality pre-kindergarten for all 3- and 4-year-olds. She has also held positions in the Department of Education and the National Head Start Association, as well as serving as executive director of the ARC of Texas, the largest voluntary organization for persons with mental retardation and their families in her home state of Texas. Dr. Doggett co-authored the first book written on child care and the Americans with Disabilities Act, and she holds a Ph.D. in early childhood special education from the University of Texas. She has 2 daughters, 1 granddaughter, and another grandchild on the way. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Doggett.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here with you to talk about pre-K and preschool.
It seems that education in our country begins earlier and earlier with every generation. Why do we need to enroll our children in pre-kindergarten?
That's a great question. I think what's important is that learning begins at birth. And we as parents and as grandparents know this and see this every day. So pre-K has actually come about because we know this in more ways now, not just as parents and grandparents, but as researchers have come to the field and as the brain specialists have started to show us what happens to children's brains so early. You don't need pre-K necessarily, but you do need great opportunities for children to learn. So just like in your story about Jody, the mother viewed pre-K as a great opportunity for her child to have a bigger world, to supplement what she's able to do at home. So we view pre-K as an opportunity to supplement, expand a child's world, learn things that they don't necessarily learn at home, or for parents who work, to actually assure that they're getting a quality early education.
Now, speaking of parents who work, what's the difference between pre-K and daycare?
That's a question we get all the time, and I think there used to be a difference between pre-K and daycare. There's less so a difference now, although there is still a difference. One is we don't call it daycare generally because people who work in child care say we don't take care of days, we take care of children. And the field is becoming more of a field of early education and care. And we have child care, which was originally set up so that parents could work. And the purpose was to provide a safe place for children while their parents worked. And we had pre-kindergarten, which was to provide an early learning experience so that children could enter school ready. Now those 2 forms are coming together, and we have more and more pre-kindergarten offered in settings that we might consider child care settings. So pre-K is not necessarily based in school. We have pre-K settings in churches, in synagogues, in mosques, in YMCAs, in community centers, as well as in schools. Some of them are just a half-day program, 2.5, 3 hours a day, and some of them actually are 6 hours like the school day, and then some actually include the wraparound so that families who work don't have to transport their children back and forth from one program to another.
Are there licensing requirements for pre-K as opposed to child care kinds of things, or no?
Child care generally has licensing requirements, but since pre-K is considered an educational experience, it is more likely to have standards, and just as you have standards in schools. So we have standards for what the environment should be like, what types of qualifications teachers should have, as well as learning outcome standards. So there's just a little bit more control for quality in pre-kindergarten than there is in child care, which generally still in this country has pretty minimal standards and qualifications and licensing.
Now, you said learning outcome standards, and a big red flag goes up in front of my face, and I see testing. What do you mean learning outcome standards?
Well, we certainly don't want any formal testing where children and or teachers are punished because children aren't learning things. But we do want accountability, and we want to know that when we're putting taxpayer money into high-quality settings for children, that children are benefiting. So I want to see teachers doing kind of ongoing natural assessments, keeping a portfolio of what the child is learning and what the drawings the child is making, and maybe taking photographs of some of the things that are happening in Jody's housekeeping center where Jody's having so much fun. Well, I'd love to see some photos of that where she starts out, and then as her play becomes more and more complex, what it looks like. So we want accountability, and it's not testing as much as it is kind of progress monitoring, making sure children are learning at all times, and if they're stuck or if they have a disability, and you know that's my field, that we identify that early and get the specialized help to the child and to the family early on.
The accountability you're describing reminds me of when my granddaughter, who's almost three, was early in daycare given some paint to use, big jars of paint that she had not had at home. She painted first her hand, and her hand was all blue. It's a wonderful photo. She's in a smock with a big brush. And then she learned to paint on paper. And that's just the progression.
That's a wonderful example of what we want to see. And think how much more confident she was the next year or even later that year when she knew how to use a paintbrush and those big jars of paint. Because at home, we have maybe not paint at all. Most families probably don't. But if I have some paint for my granddaughter, and it's little jars, so she knows what to do with those. But that's the kind of thing we want to be assessing, because those are important skills for kids to learn. Those help them the rest of their life, all the way through school, but then all the way through a job, because they learn how the world works.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on pre-K education.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Libby Doggett about pre-K education.
Could you describe an optimal pre-K situation?
Well, I'd like to take this opportunity to actually refer people to our website, because we actually have a virtual tour that will take parents through what we think a high-quality program looks like. So our website is www.preknow.org, and you'll see there's a place for parents to just click, and we have lots of resources, and then the virtual tour is there for families. We like options for parents, but we'd like to know that all the options are high quality. So some settings may be in a school, some may be in a church or synagogue, as I've described before. I think the most important thing to look for is a teacher that you fall in love with, that the parents feel really comfortable with, that you think, this is someone who I want my child to spend time with. So generally, we prefer a teacher that has a bachelor's degree, that has had the wherewithal to and the discipline to go and get that degree. We think it's necessary. It's not sufficient. So we also want a teacher that then has specialized training in early childhood, because we don't want kids sitting at desks. We don't want pre-K to look like first grade. We want children in play settings where they're playing with the paint that your granddaughter played with, in the housekeeping center, which changes to a doctor's center, which changes to a pet store, which changes to a shoe store, which changes to an office and a grocery store throughout the year, depending on the children's interests, which has incredible art activities and lots of music and lots and lots of books and reading of stories and puppets and sand play and water play and indoor play and outdoor play, but all directed by a highly qualified, loving, warm teacher who's listening and constantly observing children and thinking, what is the next step for each of these children?
Is there a ratio that we should be looking for?
Absolutely. We think small groups are critical for young children. So the guideline we use for threes is no more than 18 children with two adults in a class for three-year-olds, and no more than 20 children in a class with two adults for four-year-olds. And we want one of those adults to be a teacher with a BA in training in early childhood. We want the other teacher to actually have some sort of early childhood training, because we think this is a specialized field and we want to enhance what parents are doing at home. We want to help children grow to their maximum potential.
How do we know if our child is ready for pre-K? I know there's an issue about being ready for kindergarten, so now we have another threshold, being ready for pre-K. How do we know?
It's a great question. I think there's been a lot of talk in our country about readiness. And in pre-kindergarten, we like to think every child is ready, because what we want pre-K to be is an opportunity for children to learn. And a really good teacher and a really good program will take the children where they are and move them forward. And so you don't have to be ready for pre-K. You really want children to come in and have the opportunity to work in a group, to be with another adult, to learn to follow directions, to work in small groups, to work in large groups, to make decisions during playtime what he or she wants to do, to plan. Yesterday I was in a pre-K classroom and they sit down for planning time and then they choose what they're going to do and they tell the teacher, well, I'm going over to the block center and I'm going to build a bridge and I'm going to go in the housekeeping center and I'm going to set the table and we're going to fix a meal for the babies and I'm going to do this with Cesar. We want to see children actually having lots of choices and lots of opportunities for parents not to feel like my child's not ready at this point.
This would bring up probably an age issue, because I really can't see a one-year-old saying, I'm going to go over now and I'll play with the blocks.
Or even playing with another child. Right. There comes a time when they stop the parallel play and move to relate to each other.
You all know lots about kids, I can tell. Obviously, we think of pre-K as more for 3 and 4 year olds. There are children who are 2 and even 1 and even before 1 who are in group settings, and we want those to be high quality also. Obviously, that type of setting would look very, very different, but pre-K would generally be for a 3 and 4-year-old.
What's the best way to choose a pre-K for our children? Could one setting that fits the needs of a child be a poor setting for a different child?
Well, every child's different and every setting's different. I think that's a great question. Once again, I do want to refer people to our website, because there at www.preknow.org, we have a checklist. So a parent can download it and can take it in. It tells you what questions to ask the teacher, ask the director. It tells you what to look for indoors and outdoors and help you make a decision about what is best for your child. I think parents have to trust their judgment. I really believe parents are children's first teacher, and they should trust their judgment. Where do you feel comfortable? What's going to work for you? You may need a part-day program. You may want a full-day program. It depends on what your situation is. You may want a program that's close to your home. You may want one that's close to your work. There is the National Association for the Education of Young Children. It's called NAEYC. Accredits programs, and their programs that they accredit are considered those of the highest quality. Many states also now have quality rating systems and are going in and rating programs from 1 to 3 or 1 to 5. They do that in North Carolina. Many other states are following in North Carolina's footsteps. So parents should look and see, is there some sort of rating in our state? So we will know that we can choose a program that's of the highest rating. So find one that you feel comfortable with and look and see, is it accredited and what kind of rating is the state giving it if there's a rating system, and then look at our checklist. I think that will help parents a lot.
When you're talking about visiting and seeing whether you like the teacher and if you're comfortable in the classroom or whatever, should the children visit?
I think they should. I think the parents should go without the child if they can the first time, because you want to really look at this through an adult's eyes and not be pulled by your child. Some children are going to love a setting, even if it's bad, because they will just be excited to see all the toys and the other children. Other children who are shy might go into a really great center and not like it because they will feel uncomfortable. And I always like a program that allows children to edge in. Maybe the first week they only spend a couple hours there, or the parents stay the first day or for the first couple hours, so children have an opportunity to get used to it. But I would say if parents are trying to select the best setting, the first visit I wouldn't take the child.
Sounds like it's something parents should ask about the way a child is integrated into the setting.
Absolutely. You don't want to just drop your child off without getting them used to it, because that could be quite traumatic, just as the first day of work is traumatic for us. You want to kind of edge into these things.
I have a 36-year-old son whose own children are now in various kinds of pre-K programming. When he was little, he was going to go to a Montessori school, and he had been to visit. And the first day I took him, there was one-way glass so I could watch him after I left the room. And he stood in front of a full-length mirror which faced where I was, and he said, "I don't know why she left me here with all these people. I don't know these people, and they don't know me. Why did she leave me here?" And he was crying, and I was crying outside the door. But he did fine.
It's traumatic.
He has now become a psychiatrist, and yes, he figured it out.
Now, I went to actually Norton's Nursery School at the Episcopal Church in El Paso, Texas. I loved Norton's. I just thought it was the greatest place. I think when I was 4, my mother decided that maybe I needed to go to the El Paso High Lab school program, that it might be a little bit better quality. So she took me over, and one of the things they did was they actually looked in your throat to see if you had were well that day. And I disliked that so much that I absolutely refused to go to that program. So it was based totally on one little aspect of it that I didn't like, so I got to go back to Norton's.
You were smart even then.
What goals should parents have for their children's preschool education, in quotes?
Well, I loved your story about Jody, because I want that to be the goal. I want children saying school, school, or tool, tool, and excited about learning. I think that's the most important thing you want children to come out of pre-K with a real sense that school is fun, that learning is fun, but that school is important as well, and the social-emotional is critical. But I know parents probably want more, and they want me to be more specific, and I'm happy to do that. I think children should learn the names of the letters and learn letter sounds. They should learn to write their name. They should learn to count to 20. They should learn to recognize their numbers up to 20. They should learn that when you open a book, you start in the front and you go to the back, and that reading, when you see words, that those are important, that they have meaning. Those are really important things. But I don't want to see those taught with a teacher getting up in front of the room and teaching a letter every week, or taking it out and making it abstract. I want children learning it in very natural ways all throughout the 9 months or the couple of years they're in pre-K, with them writing their names. First, the teacher writing their names on their paintings, and then children starting to write their names on their paintings. And some pre-Ks have children start signing in, and when they first sign in, they may draw a picture, and then they start eventually writing their names. And then they start writing, when they're doing drawings, they draw pictures, and then they start putting their friends' names down. Or they're playing in the grocery store, and they start writing names of things they want to go buy in the grocery store. So it's done in a very natural setting, rather than teachers getting up and kind of doing drill and kill, which we think is very negative for children's learning.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on pre-K education.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Libby Doggett about pre-K education.
When you think about the kinds of goals that you're talking about, weren't those the kinds of goals for kindergarten a decade or two decades ago?
Absolutely.
Are we creeping down?
I think that what we've learned is that reading is much more difficult than we thought it was, and that the families' lives are more complicated than they were when the three of us were growing up. And that children can learn a lot more. We've underestimated what they can learn. And that if they start learning letters and letter sounds earlier, when they have to read for meaning in third grade, they really are reading fluently. And that means starting off a little bit earlier with those letters and letter sounds and becoming very fluent with those. Certainly families that read to their children all the time, they're going to be doing it naturally, but a lot of other children haven't had this opportunity. And so pre-K actually gives them a chance to start some of these things in a really fun environment that children are learning naturally at home sometimes. So I think it's creeping down, but it's creeping down in a good way where we're giving children opportunities to play and learn that they might not have gotten otherwise.
Does this mean that especially from socioeconomic groups that are less advantaged, it's even more important to have children in that kind of enriched setting?
Absolutely. I think all children need pre-K. Even when moms are staying home, it's nice for moms to get a break, and children are going to go and have experiences in pre-kindergarten that they won't have at home because they'll have more blocks and sand play and other things that families may not have at their house, and they learn how to go through a routine so that when they get to kindergarten, this is not new. But the research does show that disadvantaged children, children in poor families where they haven't had as many opportunities, benefit greatly from the opportunities they get from Head Start and or pre-K.
That's what we were going to ask you. Exactly. What kinds of long-range benefits are there for children who have had pre-K versus those who enter directly into kindergarten?
I think you see the popularity of pre-K growing basically because the research has shown the benefits are so long-lasting. Children who have a high-quality pre-K environment, and this is from 4 decades of research, do better in school. They're less likely to drop out. They're less likely to need special education. They do better on reading and math tests. They're more likely to graduate and go on and finish high school and actually go on to either college or community college. They also benefit throughout their lives. They're less likely to have early pregnancies. Actually, there's one study that shows they're less likely to have an abortion. They're less likely to smoke. They have better health outcomes. They get better jobs. They earn more. And they pay more taxes. So it benefits the child, it benefits the family, it benefits the community, and it benefits our country as taxpayers.
That's really a lot.
That's amazing.
That's a lot
for preschool. That's terrific.
Are pre-K opportunities extended to military families?
We found that military families are very, very happy to have high-quality pre-K opportunities for their children. Because these families are stressed, sometimes one or both parents are deployed, sometimes the children are living with grandparents, and we know that grandparents need help too. So in Texas, about a year ago, they actually opened up the pre-K program there to all children of military families or deployed guard or reserve families. So we have started that and actually found that Kansas is doing the same thing because the families are actually stressed and they need the extra supports our community can provide. And knowing that your child is going to be in one of the highest quality pre-K settings in the community and that they're really getting preparation that will last them a lifetime has been a great contribution to these families.
What about outreach to families who are not military but who may be transient, who may be immigrant, who may not know how to access these kinds of opportunities for their kids?
Well, I think outreach is critical because pre-K is growing but isn't necessarily pervasive throughout the country. It is important for states and communities to let families know. We were very excited down in Arkansas that Walmart worked with the state to do outreach when they greatly expanded their pre-K program in Arkansas. And we'd like to see more businesses coming together with states and communities to let parents know about it because they don't know. We're fortunate in this country also to have a number of child care resource and referral agencies agencies. And those agencies often are places where parents can call and get child care options, but they also now are places where parents can go and find out about pre-kindergarten options. But it is important for families to track these programs down because it may not be easy to find.
And how about if language is a problem?
Language could be a barrier, and we do know that Latino children, fastest growing population in this country, are disproportionately not participating in pre-K. And we know that the families want it. Actually, Latino families greatly value education. So we really want to see opportunities for these families to participate. And that means that you need to have outreach materials in both languages. And it also means you need to have programs where the families feel comfortable. And that means that there needs to be somebody to speak Spanish there. My daughter taught in a pre-K program where actually the children went to pre-K in English in the morning and Spanish in the afternoon. So they were not only learning English, because it's a great time to learn English in pre-K, but they were building their Spanish-speaking skills as well. And we thought that was a great way to approach it.
Well, this has been obviously a very informative show, but at this point we need to close. And before we do, Dr. Doggett, do you have some resources that you would suggest for our listeners who want to look into some of these issues further?
Of course, we always like to direct people to our own website because we've tried to build up the resources there. And the ones I'm going to recommend are actually on there, but I'm going to point out a few of them. But our website is www.preknow.org, and there's a specific section with resources for parents. But two I'd like to point out is Born Learning. The United Ways in this country came together and have developed a wonderful website called Born Learning, and they can find that from our website. And there's also a number of resources at a place called Family Communications, and that's on our website. And then Tolaris Research Institute has some wonderful videos to help parents know the kinds of things they can be doing at home with their children to enhance their learning. It's Talaris Research Institute, and once again, it's accessible on our website.
Well, you have been tremendously informative, accessible, and very, very welcome as our guest today. So, Dr. Libby Doggett, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 338 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice on a podcast. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.